not too high above. The two giant spike-encrusted grates I'd dismissed as chandeliers began lowering, slowly descending toward the chamber. I whirled to Lucian. That was the reason for the gate cleaving the chamber in two, so I would have to watch as he splattered beneath, just as I myself was squashed. The spikes, which had been supporting candles and torches, glowed red, and even from a distance I could see the heat rippling off them. Lucian wrenched at his chains. This would not be a clean death. And then I turned to the wall that Amarantha had gestured to. A lengthy inscription was carved into its smooth surface, and beneath it were three stone levers with the numbers 1, 2, and 3 engraved above them. I began to shake. I recognized only basic words, useless ones like the and but and went. Everything else was a blur of letters I didn't know, letters I'd have to slowly sound out or research to understand. The spiked grate was still descending, now level with Amarantha's head, and would soon shut off any chance I stood of getting out of this pit. The heat from the glowing iron already smothered me, sweat starting to bead at my temples. Who had told her I couldn't read? Something wrong? She raised an eyebrow. I snapped my attention to the inscription, keeping my breathing as steady as I could. She hadn't mentioned reading as an issue. She would have mocked me more if she'd known about my illiteracy. Fate. A cruel, vicious twist of fate. The chains rattled and strained, and Lucian cursed as he beheld what was before me. I turned to him, but when I saw his face, I knew he was too far to be able to read it aloud to me, even with his enhanced metal eye. If I could hear the question, I might stand a chance at solving it. But riddles weren't my strong point. I was going to be skewered by burning hot spikes and then crushed on the ground like a grape. The grate now passed over the lip of the pit, filling it entirely. No corner was safe. If I didn't answer the question before the grate passed the levers, my throat closed up, and I read and read and read, but no words came. The air became thick and stank of metal. Not magic, but burning, unforgiving steel creeping toward me, inch by inch. Answer it, Lucian shouted, his voice hitched. My eyes stung. The world was just a blur of letters, mocking me with their turns and shapes. The metal groaned as it scraped against the smooth stone of the chamber, and the fairy's whispers grew more frenzied. Through the holes in the grate, I thought I saw Lucian's eldest brother chuckle. Hot, so unbearably hot. It would hurt. Those spikes were large and blunt. It wouldn't be quick. It would take some force to pierce through my body. Sweat slid down my neck, my back, as I stared at the letters, at the 1, 2, and 3 that had somehow become my lifeline. 2 choices would doom me. 1 choice would stop the grate. I found the numbers in the inscription. It must be a riddle, a logic problem, a maze of words worse than any worm's labyrinth. Feyre! Lucian cried, panting as he stared at the ever-lowering spikes. The gleeful faces of the high fae and lesser fairies sneered at me above the grate. 3 grasshoppers. The gate wouldn't stop, and there wasn't a full body length between my head and the first of those spikes. I could have sworn the heat devoured the air in the pit. Were boo bout boon. King, sing, bouncing. I should just say my goodbyes to Tamlin, right now. This was what my life amounted to. These were my last moments. This was it. The final breaths of my body, the last beatings of my heart. Just pick one, Lucian shouted. and some of those in the crowd laughed, his brothers no doubt the loudest. I reached a hand toward the levers and stared at the three numbers beyond my trembling tattooed fingers. 1, 2, 3. They meant nothing to me beyond life and death. Chance might save me, but... 2. 2 was a lucky number, because that was like Tamlin and me, just two people. 1 had to be bad, because 1 was like Amarantha or the Adder, solitary beings. 1 was a nasty number, and 3 was too much. It was 3 sisters crammed into a tiny cottage, hating each other until they choked on it, until it poisoned them. 2. It was 2. I could gladly, willingly, fanatically believe in a cauldron and fate if they would take care of me. I believed in 2. 2. I reached for the second lever, but a blinding pain racked my hand before I could touch the stone. I hissed, withdrawing. I opened my palm to reveal the slitted eye tattooed there. It narrowed. I had to be hallucinating. The grate was about to cover the inscription, barely 6 feet above my head. I couldn't breathe, couldn't think. The heat was too much, and metal sizzled so close to my ears. I again reached for the middle lever, but the pain paralyzed my fingers. The eye had returned to its usual state. I extended my hand toward the first lever. Again, pain. I reached for the third lever. No pain. My fingers met with stone, and I looked up to find the grate not 4 feet from my head. Through it, I found a star-flecked violet gaze. I reached for the first lever. Pain. But when I reached for the third lever, Reason's face remained a mask of boredom. Sweat slipped down my brow, stinging my eyes. I could only trust him. I could only give myself up again, forced to concede by my helplessness. The spikes were so enormous up close. All I had to do was lift my arm above my head and I'd burn the flesh off my hands. "Feyre, please," Lucian moaned. I shook so badly I could scarcely stand. The heat of the spikes bore down on me. The stone lever was cool in my hand. I shut my eyes, unable to look at Tamlin, bracing myself for the impact and the agony, and pulled the third lever. Silence. The pulsing heat didn't grow closer. Then, a sigh. Lucian. I opened my eyes to find my tattooed fingers white-knuckled beneath the ink as they gripped the lever. The spikes hovered not inches from my head. Unmoving. Stopped. I had won. I had... The grate groaned as it lifted toward the ceiling, cool air flooding the chamber. I gulped it down in uneven breaths. Lucian was offering up some kind of prayer, kissing the ground again and again. The floor beneath me rose, and I was forced to release the lever that had saved me as I was brought to the surface again. My knees wobbled. I couldn't read, and it had almost killed me. I hadn't even won properly. I sank to my knees, letting the platform carry me, and covered my face in my shaking hands. Tears burned just before pain seared through my left arm. I would never beat the third task. I would never free Tamlin or his people. The pain shot through my bones again, and through my increasing hysteria, I heard words inside my head that stopped me short. Don't let her see you cry. Put your hands at your sides and stand up.
I couldn't move.
Stand. Don't give her the satisfaction of seeing you break.
My knees and spine, not entirely of my own will, forced me upright.
and when the ground at last stopped moving, I looked at Amarantha with tearless eyes.
Good, Reason told me in my head. Stare her down, no tears. Wait until you're back in your cell.
Amarantha's face was drawn and white, her black eyes like onyx as she beheld me. I had won, but I should be dead. I should be squashed, my blood oozing everywhere.
Count to 10. Don't look at Tamlin, just stare at her.
I obeyed. It was the only thing that kept me from giving in to the sobs trapped within my chest, thundering to get out. I willed myself to meet Amarantha's gaze. It was cold and vast and full of ancient malice, but I held it. I counted to 10.
Good girl. Now walk away. Turn on your heel. Good. Walk toward the door. Keep your chin high. Let the crowd part. One step after another.
I listened to him. Let him keep me tethered to sanity as I was escorted back to my cell by the guards, who still kept their distance. Reason's words echoed through my mind, holding me together. But when my cell door closed, he went silent, and I dropped to the floor and wept. I wept for hours. For myself, for Tamlin, for the fact that I should be dead and had somehow survived. I cried for everything I'd lost, every injury I'd ever received, every wound, physical or otherwise. I cried for that trivial part of me, once so full of color and light, now hollow and dark and empty. I couldn't stop. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't beat her. She won today. And she hadn't known it. She'd won. It was only by cheating that I'd survived. Tamlin would never be free, and I would perish in the most awful of ways. I couldn't read. I was an ignorant human fool. My shortcomings had caught up with me, and this place would become my tomb. I would never paint again. Never see the sun again. The walls closed in. The ceiling dropped. I wanted to be crushed. I wanted to be snuffed out. Everything converged, squeezing inward, sucking out air. I couldn't keep myself in my body. The walls were forcing me out of it. I was grasping for my body, but it hurt too much each time I tried to maintain the connection. All I had wanted, all I had dared want, was a life that was quiet, easy. Nothing more than that. Nothing extraordinary. But now? I felt the ripple in the darkness without having to look up and didn't flinch at the soft footsteps that approached me. I didn't bother hoping that it would be Tamlin.
Still weeping? Reasoned.
I didn't lower my hands from my face. The floor rose toward the lowered ceiling. I would soon be flattened. There was no color, no light here.
You've just beaten her second task. Tears are unnecessary.
I wept harder, and he laughed. The stones reverberated as he knelt before me, and though I tried to fight him, his grip was firm as he grasped my wrists and pried my hands from my face. The walls weren't moving, and the room was open, gaping. No colors, but shades of darkness, of night. Only those star-flecked violet eyes were bright, full of color and light. He gave me a lazy smile before he leaned forward. I pulled away, but his hands were like shackles. I could do nothing as his mouth met with my cheek, and he licked away a tear. His tongue was hot against my skin, so startling that I couldn't move as he licked away another path of salt water, and then another. My body went taut and loose all at once, and I burned, even as chills shuddered along my limbs,
It was only when his tongue danced along the damp edges of my lashes that I jerked back. He chuckled as I scrambled for the corner of my cell. I wiped my face as I glared at him. He smirked, sitting down against a wall.
I figured that would get you to stop crying.
It was disgusting. I wiped my face again.
Was it?
He quirked an eyebrow and pointed to his palm, to the place where my tattoo would be.
Beneath all your pride and stubbornness, I could have sworn I detected something that felt differently. Interesting.
Get out.
As usual, your gratitude is overwhelming.
Do you want me to kiss your feet for what you did at the trial? Do you want me to offer another week of my life?
Not unless you feel compelled to do so, he said, his eyes like stars.
It was bad enough that my life was forfeited to this Fey Lord, but to have a bond where he could now freely read my thoughts and feelings and communicate.
Who would have thought that the self-righteous human girl couldn't read?
Keep your damned mouth shut about it.
Me? I wouldn't dream of telling anyone. Why waste that kind of knowledge on petty gossip?
If I'd had the strength, I would have leaped on him and ripped him apart. You're a disgusting bastard.
I'll have to ask Tamlin if this kind of flattery won his heart.
He groaned as he stood, a soft, deep-throated noise that traveled along my bones. His eyes met with mine and he smiled slowly. I exposed my teeth, almost hissing.
I'll spare you the escort duties tomorrow, he said, shrugging as he walked to the cell door. But the night after, I expect you to be looking your finest.
He gave me a grin that suggested my finest wasn't very much at all. He paused by the door, but didn't dissolve into darkness.
I've been thinking of ways to torment you when you come to my court. I'm wondering, will assigning you to learn to read be as painful as it looked today?
He vanished into shadow before I could launch myself at him. I paced through my cell, scowling at the eye in my hand. I spat every curse I could at it, but there was no response. It took me a long while to realize that Rescind, whether he knew it or not, had effectively kept me from shattering completely. Chapter 41. What followed the second trial was a series of days that I don't care to recall. A permanent darkness settled over me, and I began to look forward to the moment when Rescind gave me that goblet of fairy wine and I could lose myself for a few hours. I stopped contemplating Amarantha's riddle. It was impossible, especially for an illiterate, ignorant human. Thinking of Tamlin made everything worse. I'd beaten two of Amarantha's tasks, but I knew it deep in my bones, that the third would be the one to kill me. After what had happened to her sister, what Jurian had done, she would never let me leave here alive. I couldn't entirely blame her. I doubted I would ever forget or forgive something like that being done to Nesta or Elaine, no matter how many centuries had passed. But I still wasn't going to leave here alive. The future I'd dreamed of was just that, a dream. I'd grow old and withered, while he would remain young for centuries, perhaps millennia. At best, I'd have decades with him before I died. Decades. That was what I was fighting for, a flash in time for them, a drop in the pool of their eons. So I greedily drank the wine, and I stopped caring about who I was and what had once mattered to me. I stopped thinking about color, about light, about the green of Tamlin's eyes, about all those things I had still wanted to paint and now would never get to. I wasn't going to leave this mountain alive. I was walking to the dressing chamber with Reason's two shadow servants, staring at nothing and thinking of even less, when a hissing noise and the flap of wings sounded from around an upcoming corner. The Atter. The fairies beside me tensed, but their chins rose slightly. I'd never become accustomed to the Atter, but I had come to accept its malignant presence. Seeing my escort stiffen awakened a dormant dread, and my mouth turned dry as we neared the bend. Even though we were veiled and hidden by shadow, each step brought me closer to that winged demon. My feet turned leaden. Then a lower, guttural voice grunted in response to the hissing of the Atter. Nails clicked on stone, and my escort swapped glances before they swung me into an alcove, a tapestry that hadn't been there a moment before falling over us, the shadows deepening, solidifying. I had a feeling that if someone pulled back that tapestry, they would see only darkness and stone. One of them covered my mouth with a hand, holding me tightly to her, shadows slithering down her arm and onto mine. She smelled of jasmine. I'd never noticed that before. After all these nights, I didn't even know their names. The Atter and its companion rounded the bend, still talking, their voices low. It was only when I could understand their words that I realized we weren't merely hiding. "Yes," the Atter was saying. "Good. She'll be most pleased to hear that they're ready at last."
"But will the High Lords contribute their forces?"
The guttural voice replied. I could have sworn it snorted like a pig. It came closer and closer, unaware of us. My escorts pressed in tighter to me, so tense that I realized they were holding their breath. Handmaidens and spies.
"The High Lords will do as she tells them,"
the Atter gloated, and its tail slithered and slashed across the floor.
"I heard talk from soldiers in Highburn that the High King is not pleased regarding this situation with the girl. Amarantha made a fool's bargain. She cost him the war the last time because of her madness with Jurian. If she turns her back on him again, he will not be so willing to forgive her. Stealing his spells and taking a territory for her own is one thing. Failure to aid his cause a second time is another."
There was a loud hiss, and I trembled as the Atter snapped its jaws at its companion.
"Milady makes no bargains that are not advantageous to her. She lets them claw at hope, but once it is shattered, they are her beautifully broken minions."
They had to be passing right before the tapestry.
"You had better hope so,"
the guttural voice replied. What manner of creature was this thing to be so unmoved by the Atter? My escort's shadowy hand clamped tighter around my mouth, and the Atter passed on. "Don't trust your senses," Alice's voice echoed through my mind. The Atter had caught me once before when I thought I was safe.
"And you had better hold your tongue," the Atter warned, "or Milady will do so for you, and her pincers are not kind."
The other creature snorted that pig noise.
"I am here on a condition of immunity from the king. If your lady thinks she's above the king because she rules this wretched land, she'll soon remember who can strip her powers away, without spells and potions."
The Atter didn't reply, and a part of me wished for it to retort, to snap back. But it was silenced, and fear hit my stomach like a stone dropped into a pool. Whatever plans the King of Highburn had been working on for these long years, his campaign to take back the mortal world, it seemed he was no longer content to wait. Perhaps Amarantha would soon receive what she wanted. Destruction of my entire realm. My blood went cold,
Nesta. I trusted Nesta to get my family away, to protect them. Their voices faded, and it wasn't until a good extra minute had passed that the two females relaxed. The tapestry vanished, and we slipped back into the hall. "What was that?" I said, looking from one to the other as the shadows around us lightened, but not by much. "Who was that?" I clarified. "Trouble," they answered in unison. "Does Reason know?" "He will soon," one of them said. We resumed our silent walk to the dressing room. There was nothing I could do about the King of Highburn anyway. Not while trapped under the mountain. Not when I hadn't even been able to free Tamlin, much less myself. And with Nesta prepared to flee with my family, there was no one else to warn. So day after day passed, bringing my third trial ever closer. I suppose I sank so far into myself that it took something extraordinary to pull me out again. I was watching the light dance along the damp stones of the ceiling of my cell, like moonlight on water, when a noise traveled to me, down through the stones, rippling across the floor. I was so used to the strange fiddles and drums of the fairies that when I heard the lilting melody, I thought it was another hallucination. Sometimes, if I stared at the ceiling long enough, it became a vast expanse of the starry night sky, and I became a small, unimportant thing that blew away in the wind. I looked toward the small vent in the corner of the ceiling through which the music entered my cell. The source must have been far away, for it was just a faint stirring of notes, but when I closed my eyes, I could hear it more clearly. I could see it, as if it were a grand painting, a living mural. There was beauty in this music, beauty and goodness. The music folded over itself like batter being poured from a bowl, one note atop another, melting together to form a whole, rising, filling me. It wasn't wild music, but there was a violence of passion in it, a swelling kind of joy and sorrow. I pulled my knees to my chest, needing to feel the sturdiness of my skin, even with the slime of the oily paint upon it. The music built a path, an ascent founded upon archways of color. I followed it, walking out of that cell, through layers of earth, up and up, into fields of cornflowers, past a canopy of trees, and into the open expanse of sky. The pulse of the music was like hands that gently pushed me onward, pulling me higher, guiding me through the clouds. I'd never seen clouds like these. In their puffy sides, I could discern faces, fair and sorrowful. They faded before I could view them too clearly, and I looked into the distance to where the music summoned me. It was either a sunset or a sunrise. The sun filled the clouds with magenta and purple, and its orange-gold rays blended with my path to form a band of shimmering metal. I wanted to fade into it, wanted the light of that sun to burn me away, to fill me with such joy that I would become a ray of sunshine myself. This wasn't music to dance to. It was music to worship, music to fill in the gaps of my soul, to bring me to a place where there was no pain. I didn't realize I was weeping until the wet warmth of a tear splashed upon my arm. But even then, I clung to the music, gripping it like a ledge that kept me from falling. I hadn't realized how badly I didn't want to tumble into that deep dark, how much I wanted to stay here among the clouds and color and light. I let the sounds ravage me, let them lay me flat and run over my body with their drums, up and up, building to a palace in the sky, a hall of alabaster and moonstone, where all that was lovely and kind and fantastic dwelled in peace. I wept. Wept to be so close to that palace. Wept from the need to be there. Everything I wanted was there. The one I loved was there. The music was Tamlin's fingers strumming my body. It was the gold in his eyes and the twist of his smile. It was that breathy chuckle and the way he said those three words. It was this I was fighting for, this I had sworn to save. The music rose, louder, grander, faster from wherever it was played, a wave that peaked, shattering the gloom of my cell. A shuddering sob broke from me as the sound faded into silence. I sat there, trembling and weeping, too raw and exposed, left naked by the music and the color in my mind. When the tears had stopped, but the music still echoed in my every breath, I lay on my pallet of hay, listening to my breathing. The music flittered through my memories, binding them together, making them into a quilt that wrapped around me, that warmed my bones. I looked at the eye in the center of my palm, but it only stared right back at me, unmoving. 2 more days until my final trial. Just 2 more days, and then I would learn what the eddies of the cauldron had planned for me. Chapter 42. It was a party like any other, even if it would likely be my last. Fairies drank and lounged and danced, laughing and singing bawdy and ethereal songs. No glimmer of anticipation for what might occur tomorrow, what I stood to alter for them, for their world. Perhaps they knew I would die too. I lurked by a wall, forgotten by the crowd, waiting for Reason to beckon me to drink the wine and dance or do whatever it was he wished of me. I was clothed in my typical attire, tattooed from the neck down with that blue-black paint. Tonight, my gossamer gown was a shade of sunset pink, the color too bright and feminine against the whorls of paint on my skin, too cheery for what awaited me tomorrow. Recent was taking longer than usual to summon me, though it was probably because of the supple-bodied fairy perched in his lap, caressing his hair with her long greenish fingers. He'd tire of her soon. I didn't bother to look at Amarantha. I was better off pretending she wasn't there. Lucian never spoke to me in public, and Tamlin, it had become difficult to look at him in recent days. I just wanted it done. I wanted that wine to carry me through this last night and bring me to my fate. I was so intent on anticipating Reason's order to serve him that I didn't notice that someone stood beside me until the heat from his body leaked onto mine. I went rigid when I smelled that rain and earthen scent and didn't dare turn to Tamlin. We stood side by side, staring out at the crowd, as still and unnoticeable as statues. His fingers brushed mine, and a line of fire went through me, burning me so badly that my eyes pricked with tears. I wished he wasn't touching my marred hand, that his fingers didn't have to caress the contours of that wretched tattoo. But I lived in that moment. My life became beautiful again for those few seconds when our hands grazed. I kept my face set in a mask of cold. He dropped his hand, and as quickly as he had come, he sauntered off, weaving through the crowd. It was only when he glanced over his shoulder and inclined his head ever so slightly that I understood. My heart beat faster than it ever had during my trials, and I made myself look as bored as possible before I pushed off the wall and casually strolled after him. I took a different route, but headed toward the small door half hidden by a tapestry near which he lingered.
I had only moments before Rescind would begin looking for me, but a moment alone with Tamlin would be enough. I could scarcely breathe as I moved nearer and nearer to the door, past Amarantha's dais, past a group of giggling fairies. Tamlin disappeared through the door as quick as lightning, and I slowed my steps to a meandering pace. These days, no one really paid attention to me until I became Reese's drugged plaything. All too quickly, the door was before me, and it swung open noiselessly to let me in. Darkness encompassed me. I saw only a flash of green and gold before the warmth of Tamlin's body slammed into me and our lips met. I couldn't kiss him deeply enough, couldn't hold him tightly enough, couldn't touch enough of him. Words weren't necessary. I tore at his shirt, needing to feel the skin beneath one last time, and I had to stifle a moan that rose up in me as he grasped my breasts. I didn't want him to be gentle, because what I felt for him wasn't at all like that. What I felt was wild and hard and burning, and so he was with me. He tore his lips from mine and bit my neck, bit it as he had on fire night. I had to grind my teeth to keep myself from moaning and giving us away. This might be the last time I touched him, the last time we could be together. I wouldn't waste it. My fingers grappled with his belt buckle, and his mouth found mine again. Our tongues danced, not a waltz or a minuet, but a war dance, a death dance of bone drums and screaming fiddles. I wanted him. Here. I hooked a leg around his middle, needing to be closer, and he ground his hips harder against me, crushing me into the icy wall. I pried the belt buckle loose, whipping the leather free, and Tamlin growled his desire in my ear, a low, probing sort of sound that made me see red and white and lightning. We both knew what tomorrow would bring. I tossed away his belt and started fumbling for his pants. Someone coughed. "Shameful," Rescind purred, and we whirled to find him faintly illuminated by the light that broke in through the doorway. But he stood behind us, farther into the passage rather than toward the door. He hadn't come in through the throne room. With that ability of his, he had probably walked through the walls. "Just shameful." He stalked toward us. Tamlin remained holding me. "Look at what you've done to my pet." Panting, neither of us said anything, but the air became a cold kiss upon my skin, upon my exposed breasts. "Amarantha would be greatly aggrieved if she knew her little warrior was dallying with the human help," Rescind went on, crossing his arms. "I wonder how she'd punish you. Or perhaps she'd stay true to habit and punish Lucian. He still has one eye to lose, after all. Maybe she'll put it in a ring, too." Ever so slowly, Tamlin removed his hands from my body and stepped out of my embrace. "I'm glad to see you're being reasonable," Rescind said, and Tamlin bristled. "Now, be a clever High Lord and buckle your belt and fix your clothes before you go out there." Tamlin looked at me, and to my horror, did as Rescind instructed. My High Lord never took his eyes off my face as he straightened his tunic and hair, then retrieved and fastened his belt again. The paint on his hands and clothes, paint from me, vanished. "Enjoy the party," Rescind crooned, pointing to the door. Tamlin's green eyes flickered as they continued to stare into mine. He softly said, "I love you." Without another glance at Rescind, he left. I was temporarily blinded by the brightness that poured in when he opened the door and slipped out. He did not look back at me before the door snicked shut and darkness returned to the dim hall. Reesend chuckled. If you're that desperate for release, you should have asked me.
Pig, I snapped, covering my breasts with the folds of my gown.
With a few easy steps, he crossed the distance between us and pinned my arms to the wall. My bones groaned. I could have sworn shadow talons dug into the stones beside my head.
Do you actually intend to put yourself at my mercy, or are you truly that stupid?
His voice was composed of sensuous, bone-breaking ire. I'm not your slave.
You're a fool, Feyre. Do you have any idea what could have happened had Amarantha found you two in here? Tamlin might refuse to be her lover, but she keeps him at her side out of the hopes that she'll break him, dominate him as she loves to do with our kind.
I kept silent.
You're both fools, he murmured, his breathing uneven. How did you not think that someone would notice you were gone? You should thank the cauldron Lucian's delightful brothers weren't watching you.
What do you care? I barked, and his grip tightened enough on my wrists that I knew my bones would snap with a little more pressure.
What do I care? He breathed, wrath twisting his features.
Wings, those membranous, glorious wings, flared from his back, crafted from the shadows behind him.
What do I care?
Before he could go on, his head snapped to the door, then back to my face. The wings vanished as quickly as they had appeared, and then his lips were crushing onto mine. His tongue pried my mouth open, forcing himself into me, into the space where I could still taste Tamlin. I pushed and thrashed, but he held firm, his tongue sweeping over the roof of my mouth against my teeth, claiming my mouth, claiming me. The door was flung wide, and Amarantha's curved fingers filled its space. Tamlin. Tamlin was beside her, his eyes slightly wide, shoulders tight as Reese's lips still crushed mine. Amarantha laughed, and a mask of stone slammed down on Tamlin's face, void of feeling, void of anything vaguely like the Tamlin I'd been tangled up with moments before. Reese casually released me with the flick of his tongue over my bottom lip as a crowd of high fae appeared behind Amarantha and chimed in with her laughter. Reese gave them a lazy, self-indulgent grin and bowed. But something sparked in the queen's eyes as she looked at Reese. Amarantha's whore, they'd called him. I knew it was a matter of time, she said, putting a hand on Tamlin's arm. The other she lifted. Lifted so Jurian's eye might see as she said, You humans are all the same, aren't you? I kept my mouth shut, even as I could have died for shame, even as I ached to explain. Tamlin had to realize the truth. But I wasn't given the luxury of learning whether Tamlin understood as Amarantha clicked her tongue and turned away, taking her entourage with her. Typical human trash with their inconstant dull hearts, she said to herself. Nothing more than a satisfied cat. Following them, Reese grabbed my arm to drag me back into the throne room. It was only when the light hit me that I saw the smudges and smears on my paint, smudges along my breasts and stomach, and the paint that had mysteriously appeared on Reese's hands.
I'm tired of you for tonight, Reese said, giving me a light shove toward the main exit. Go back to your cell.
Behind him, Amarantha and her court smiled with glee, their grins widening when they beheld the marred paint. I looked for Tamlin, but he was stalking for his usual throne on the dais, keeping his back to me, as if he couldn't stand to look. I don't know what time it was, but hours later, footsteps sounded inside my cell. I jolted into a sitting position, and Reese stepped out of a shadow. I could still feel the heat of his lips against mine, the smooth glide of his tongue inside my mouth, even though I'd washed my mouth out 3 times with the bucket of water in my cell. His tunic was unbuttoned at the top, and he ran a hand through his blue-black hair before he wordlessly slumped against the wall across from me and slid to the floor. "What do you want?" I demanded. "A moment of peace and quiet," he snapped, rubbing his temples. I paused. "From what?" He massaged his pale skin, making the corner of his eyes go up and down, in and out. He sighed.
"From this mess."
I sat up farther on my pallet of hay. I'd never seen him so candid.
"That damn bitch is running me ragged," he went on, and dropped his hands from his temples to lean his head against the wall. "You hate me. Imagine how you'd feel if I made you serve in my bedroom. I'm High Lord of the Night Court, not her harlot."
So the slurs were true. And I could imagine very easily how much I would hate him, what it would do to me to be enslaved to someone like that.
"Why are you telling me this?"
The swagger and nastiness were gone.
"Because I'm tired and lonely, and you're the only person I can talk to without putting myself at risk."
He let out a low laugh.
"How absurd. A High Lord of Prithian and,
You can leave if you're just going to insult me."
"But I'm so good at it."
He flashed one of his grins. I glared at him, but he sighed.
"One wrong move tomorrow, Feyre, and we're all doomed."
The thought struck a chord of such horror that I could hardly breathe.
"And if you fail," he went on, more to himself than to me, "then Amarantha will rule forever."
If she captured Tamlin's power once, who's to say she can't do it again? It was the question I hadn't yet dared voice.
"He won't be tricked again so easily," he said, staring up at the ceiling. "Her biggest weapon is that she keeps our powers contained. But she can't access them, not wholly, though she can control us through them. It's why I've never been able to shatter her mind, why she's not dead already. The moment you break Amarantha's curse, Tamlin's wrath will be so great that no force in the world will keep him from splattering her on the walls."
A chill went through me.
"Why do you think I'm doing this?"
He waved a hand to me. "Because you're a monster." He laughed.
"True, but I'm also a pragmatist. Working Tamlin into a senseless fury is the best weapon we have against her. Seeing you enter into a fool's bargain with Amarantha was one thing, but when Tamlin saw my tattoo on your arm, oh, you should have been born with my abilities, if only to have felt the rage that seeped from him."
I didn't want to think much about his abilities. Who's to say he won't splatter you as well?
"Perhaps he'll try, but I have a feeling he'll kill Amarantha first. That's what it all boils down to anyway. Even your servitude to me can be blamed on her. So he'll kill her tomorrow, and I'll be free before he can start a fight with me that will reduce our once sacred mountain to rubble."
He picked at his nails.
"And I have a few other cards to play."
I lifted my brows in silent question.
"Feyre, for Cauldron's sake, I drug you, but you don't wonder why I never touch you beyond your waist or arms?"
"Until tonight. Until that damned kiss." I gritted my teeth, but even as my anger rose, a picture cleared.
"It's the only claim I have to innocence," he said. The only thing that will make Tamlin think twice before entering into a battle with me that would cause a catastrophic loss of innocent life. It's the only way I can convince him I was on your side. Believe me, I would have liked nothing more than to enjoy you. But there are bigger things at stake than taking a human woman to my bed.
I knew, but I still asked. Like what?
Like my territory, he said,
and his eyes held a far-off look that I hadn't yet seen.
Like my remaining people, enslaved to a tyrant queen who can end their lives with a single word. Surely Tamlin expressed similar sentiments to you.
He hadn't, not entirely. He hadn't been able to, thanks to the curse. Why did Amarantha target you? I dared ask. Why make you her whore?
Beyond the obvious?
He gestured to his perfect face. When I didn't smile, he loosed a breath.
My father killed Tamlin's father and his brothers.
I started. Tamlin had never said, never told me the Night Court was responsible for that.
It's a long story, and I don't feel like getting into it. But let's just say that when she stole our lands out from under us, Amarantha decided that she especially wanted to punish the son of her friend's murderer. Decided that she hated me enough for my father's deeds that I was to suffer.
I might have reached a hand toward him, might have offered my apologies, but every thought had dried up in my head. What Amarantha had done to him.
So, he said wearily, here we are, with the fate of our immortal world in the hands of an illiterate human.
His laugh was unpleasant as he hung his head, cupping his forehead in a hand and closed his eyes.
What a mess.
Part of me searched for the words to wound him in his vulnerability, but the other half recalled all that he had said, all that he had done, how his head snapped to the door before he'd kissed me. He'd known Amarantha was coming. Maybe he'd done it to make her jealous, but maybe. If he hadn't been kissing me, if he hadn't shown up and interrupted us, I would have gone out into that throne room covered in smudged paint. And everyone, especially Amarantha, would have known what I'd been up to. It wouldn't have taken much to figure out whom I'd been with, especially not once they saw the paint on Tamlin. I didn't want to consider what the punishment might have been. Regardless of his motives or his methods, Rescind was keeping me alive, and had done so even before I set foot under the mountain.
I've told you too much, he said as he got to his feet. Perhaps I should have drugged you first. If you were clever, you'd find a way to use this against me. And if you had any stomach for cruelty, you'd go to Amarantha and tell her the truth about her whore. Perhaps she'd give you Tamlin for it.
He slid his hands into the pockets of his black pants, but even as he faded into shadow, there was something in the curve of his shoulders that made me speak. When you healed my arm, you didn't need to bargain with me. You could have demanded every single week of the year. My brows knit together as he turned, already half consumed by the dark. Every single week. And I would have said yes. It wasn't entirely a question, but I needed the answer. A half smile appeared on his sensuous lips.
I know, he said,
and vanished. Chapter 43. For my final task, I was given my old tunic and pants, stained and torn and reeking, but despite my stench, I kept my chin high as I was escorted to the throne room. The doors were flung open, and the silence of the room assaulted me. I waited for the jeers and shouts, waited to see gold flash as the onlookers placed their bets, but this time the fairies just stared at me, the masked ones especially intently. Their world rested on my shoulders, Reese had said. But I didn't think it was worry alone that was spread across their features. I had to swallow hard as a few of them touched their fingers to their lips, then extended their hand to me. A gesture for the fallen, a farewell to the honored dead. There was nothing malicious about it. Most of these fairies belonged to the courts of the High Lords, had belonged to those courts long before Amarantha seized their lands, their lives. And if Tamlin and Reesend were playing games to keep us alive. I strode up the path they'd cleared, straight for Amarantha. The queen smiled when I stopped in front of her throne. Tamlin was in his usual place beside her, but I wouldn't look at him. Not yet. Two trials lie behind you, Amarantha said, picking at a fleck of dust on her blood-red gown. Her black hair shone, a gleaming darkness that threatened to swallow up her golden crown. And only one more awaits. I wonder if it will be worse to fail now, when you are so close. She gave me a pout, and we both awaited the laughter of the fairies. But only a few laughs hissed from the red-skinned guards. Everyone else remained silent. Even Lucian's miserable brothers, even Reesend, wherever he was in the crowd. I blinked to clear my burning eyes. Perhaps, like Reesend's, their odes of allegiance and betting on my life and nastiness had been a show. And perhaps now that the end was imminent, they too would face my potential death with whatever dignity they had left. Amarantha glared at them, but when her gaze fell upon me, she smiled broadly, sweetly. Any words to say before you die? I came up with a plethora of curses, but I instead looked at Tamlin. He didn't react. His features were like stone. I wished that I could glimpse his face, if only for a moment. But all I needed to see were those green eyes. I love you, I said. No matter what she says about it, no matter if it's only with my insignificant human heart, even when they burn my body, I'll love you. My lips trembled, and my vision clouded before several warm tears slipped down my chilled face. I didn't wipe them away. He didn't react. He didn't even grip the arms of his throne. I suppose that was his way of enduring it, even if it made my chest cave in, even if his silence killed me. Amarantha said sweetly, "You'll be lucky, my darling, if we even have enough left of you to burn." I stared at her long and hard. But her words were not met with jeers or smiles or applause from the crowd, only silence. It was a gift that gave me courage, that made me bunch my fists, that made me embrace the tattoo on my arm. I had beaten her until now, fairly or not, and I would not feel alone when I died. I would not die alone. It was all I could ask for. Amarantha propped her chin on a hand. You never figured out my riddle, did you? I didn't respond, and she smiled. Pity. The answer is so lovely. Get it over with, I growled. Amarantha looked at Tamlin. No final words to her, she said, quirking an eyebrow. When he didn't respond, she grinned at me. Very well, then. She clapped her hands twice. A door swung open,
and three figures, two male and one female, with brown sacks tied over their heads, were dragged in by the guards. Their concealed faces turned this way and that